And good morning, Bruce.
And good morning, Cora. And wow, showers, showers and showers there by the looks of the next few days. How are you all this morning? It's been another week. It's back to school for many young students this week. We've had the 4th of July. Well, that was a couple of weeks ago. The 14th of July, Bastille Day. And good morning, Ben. It was delightful to run into you last week and to know that you listen to Yarra Valley FM 99.1 every day of the week. Wow, wish all tradies did that. Good morning to you this morning. And Megan is back from her travels all over the country. I think I'll let you tell us when we put you on air in a moment, Megan, but I think you left Victoria about the 12th of April. So, God, that's 3 months or something. Anyway, we'll hear all about that in a moment. We've got the Olympics coming up in just 2 weeks' time. Wow, in the midst of COVID, very complex time, isn't it? And those of us that are counting down on the weather climbs, we've got about 6 weeks of winter left before we officially hit the 1st of September and things suddenly get warmer or something like that. Well, in the midst of all those dates, we've also ticked over from the 30th of June to the 1st of July. And we all know what that means, especially the accountants and the bookkeepers among us, because it's the start of a new financial year. But it's actually a start of a new year for community groups, for organisations, for many entities that click over into a new book, into a new year, into a new plan and all sorts of things on the 1st of July. And there's no one better to take us through what does that mean for community groups, for organisations when we start to think about reporting and particularly as we lead up to annual general meetings. Megan, I think you're back in the state. We're thinking you're almost home after, is it 3 months? Has it been that long?
Yes, so we left home on the 7th of April. So it's a bit over 3 months. And yes, we're very pleased to be back in Victoria after the challenges around the borders over the recent weeks. And I think we've got back just in time.
I think you might have. And I think we're all holding our breath, hoping that Victoria escapes another lockdown as early as next week. But let's watch this space and let's hope that people stick to the rules and show some common sense around the place. Megan, in your travels, you have been all over the country. You've been in every state just about, apart from Tasmania this time. Is that right?
So we've been South Australia, Northern Territory and WA. I worked out last night, by the time we get home tomorrow, we'll have done 21,000 Ks around the eastern half of the country. The western half of the country.
Yes, 21,000 kilometres. I'll have to stop and figure out how many hours driving that is. But, wow, I'm impressed. And I must admit, and Cora is looking the same over here, we're very jealous, Megan. And we have been getting your travel logs. So, well done, you. No punctures or accidents along the way?
A few minor breakages, but nothing that couldn't be fixed on the road, so that was okay. But I was looking at the forecast for Buxton last night on the weekend. It's going to be snow down to 700, and I was thinking about 35 degree temperatures up at Mataranka not that long ago. So it's going to be a bit of a rude shock getting home.
Yes, it is. And for those of you who perhaps have not heard Megan on our amazing Community Conversations program before, Megan Buntine is She is a resource person, an amazing resource person for community groups, for not-for-profit organisations, for strategic planning, for training, for fundraising, for well, good governance, most of all, and a whole lot of other things. You can go on to her website, www.mjbconsulting.net.au. I'll give you that again later on. Or you can contact Megan, Megan at mjbconsulting.net.au. If you want some advice, some support, some resources, there's lots of free goodies on her website there. This morning, Megan and I have decided, because we have hit a new year for many organisations, that we really should be talking about AGMs and reporting processes. And I was thinking, Megan, I was just trying to be a bit funny and think about what AGM could stand for. And of course, it could be a great meeting. It could be any good moment. It could be all girls matter, or another guy's mother, or perhaps just a good move, or actually all groups. All groups matter. And look, I think that's enough from me. AGMs.
I think we should stop there.
I think we should stop right there. Are a very important part of the annual cycle, aren't they, for community groups, for not-for-profit organisations, Megan?
Yeah, absolutely. Really key point for any incorporated association. There's legal requirements around it, reporting to your members, if you have members, reporting to government through the regulatory body, whether that be Consumer Affairs or the Australian Charities Not-for-Profit Commission. And I think sometimes AGMs are things that people get themselves tied up in knots about a bit, just because there are some formalities associated with it that you need to meet. So I just thought it was a good time to have a conversation about it and just remind people about where you can go to sort of step you through those legal requirements, I guess.
Yeah, fantastic. And so we've decided, haven't we, Megan, over the long-distance Zoom and as we're Zooming again today, that we'll split it into three parts for our listeners this morning. We're going to talk about before, during and after. So things we need to do before an AGM in terms of getting ready and things that we should be considering now as we tick over into July. Things that need to happen at the meeting and the conduct of the meeting. And then thirdly, what about after the meeting? What does it mean in terms of filling in forms and doing the follow-up? So those are the three parts we're going to look at this morning. And there's some really critical things. So if you are, as many of you listeners are, involved in any kind of community group, organisation, not-for-profit, then stay tuned. Megan's given us an amazing selection of songs again this morning. And I think, Cora, we want to just go to that Buckman Turner Overdrive as a starting, because it's talking about taking care of business. Megan, I can't recognise this one, but tell us about it.
You will when you hear it. Okay. I just tried to think of what are some songs that will get us all G'd up to get on with the business of our getting ready for our AGMs.
There we go. Have a listen.
taking care of business. Taking care of business.
Every day.
Taking care of business.
Every way.
Taking care of business.
And thanks for joining me, Bruce Argyle, for Community Conversations on our regular Thursday morning time slot, 9 till 10 o'clock. And, well, All Good Megan, that's an AGM. We are talking AGMs this morning because it's an important part of the year for not-for-profit and community groups. Megan, we've decided to split it into three parts, talking about what do we need beforehand, what happens at the meeting, and what do we have to do after it. So let's start with the real basic questions. Why do we have to have an AGM, and when do we have to have them, Megan? Why do we have to have these AGMs every year?
Well, from the why point of view, as a legally incorporated body, you know, it's a requirement of the Act. It's as simple as that. And I guess the reason that it's a requirement of the Act is to bring some accountability and some transparency, or to ensure we have accountability and transparency in our organisations, that we're communicating with our members how our finances are tracking, how we're using the resources of the organisation, what our achievements have been throughout the year, so having reports presented, all those sorts of things. I think, you know, in terms of when do we have to have it, again, you know, your rules are, that's what comes directly out of the Act, and that tells you how you have to conduct your organisation to be consistent with the Act. So use your rules as a guide for everything.
And of course, when you're talking about the Act, you're talking about the Incorporations Act, aren't you, Megan?
Yeah, yes. So the Associations Incorporation Reform Act. So it's a Victorian piece of legislation, and Consumer Affairs Victoria is the governing, is the government agency that regulates that. So you can find lots of good information on their website about how to run your AGM properly and what to do in advance. The other thing that's a really good resource, which is like my Bible, I have to say, for incorporated associations, is the Secretary's Satchel, which was put out by Justice Connect. That's got, I was just looking at before we went on air, it's got nearly 30 pages in it about how to run an AGM appropriately.
Wow. So compared it's Justice to Connect.
Yeah, so compared to the Act, which has got a few paragraphs, the Secretary's Satchel is a much more detailed and I find it's a really, really useful resource. So your other question was, when do we have to have your AGM? Mm. So again, go back to your rules and see what your rules say. But generally, well, the access, we have to have it within 5 months of our financial year end. So for most organisations whose financial year ends on the 30th of June, that's by the end of November. Your rules, your financial year might end earlier than that, say 30th of April, so you just need to work out, you know, when does your financial year end, what does your rules say about how many months. Your rules might say that, in fact, you have to have it within 3 months at the end of your financial year. So I guess the take-home message from this one is use your rules as your guide. Go back to your rules all the time and look at those particular requirements.
Fantastic. And most organisations have their AGM cycle down, well, clockwork, in terms of, you know, they have it every September or they have it every October. It doesn't have to be as daunting as, you know, at times we might make it sound, I guess, Megan, you know, that there are certainly things that we have to watch out for, but we don't need to be, you know, anxious or or scared of having an AGM either.
No, it's just another process, and so long as you step through the process, it's not difficult. One thing just to think about too, for organisations that are brand new, you actually have 18 months from the start of becoming an incorporated body to have your first AGM. So that sort of gets you into that cycle. And then after that, it has to be within that 5 months at the end of your financial year.
Well, there you go. I just learned something. I didn't know that. Or maybe I didn't. I've forgotten, Megan. But how does an AGM differ from what we might have called a special meeting, you know, of a body? You know, that sometimes we talk about special meetings, don't we? Is an AGM just a big special meeting?
So the Act defines Well, in a way, I guess so. The Act defines any meeting that's not a special general... sorry, I'll start that again. Any meeting that's not an annual general meeting or a disciplinary meeting, any member meeting, is a special general meeting. So if we sort of put all our other meetings to one side as special general meetings, then our annual general meetings, that's the critical one we have to have every year to report to our members. There's no requirement to have special general meetings. An organisation can choose if they wish to have those, or the members can call one of those. You do, however, need to have four committee meetings a year, which is different, again, to your member meetings. Mm. So if we're just talking about member meetings, we've got the AGM or we've got special general meetings.
Okay. And leading up to an AGM, then, there's some legal requirements, aren't there, Megan? Just tell us about that in terms of of notice and things.
So you need to make sure, and again, this is why you need to go back to the Secretary Satchel and use that as a guide. So you need to make sure that you give your members adequate notice of the meeting, date and time and venue, and also what's going to be discussed at that meeting. So if it's just a regular annual general meeting where you're just presenting your annual reports and so forth, and you're electing your committee going forward according to your rules. For some organisations, that might be all of your committee. For others, it might just be a portion of your committee or your board. So if it's just a case like that, it's generally 14 days. So I usually allow about 16 days when you're thinking about, you know, making sure you get it to people on time. Particularly back in the day when it was snail mail, we were reliant on. Little less of an issue these days when you're using electronic means. But the other thing to think about is if you are putting a special resolution to the members at the meeting, so a special resolution is it's a range of special decisions. So it could include things like changing your rules, changing the name of your organisation, making a decision to wind up, those sort of key things. Again, go to the Secretary Satchel and you'll read a lot more information about this sort of stuff. But if you're having a special resolution tabled at your annual general meeting, you actually need to give people more notice. You need to give them at least 21 days notice.
Okay.
So I'd be getting that one out, you know, 23 days in advance instead.
Yep. And talking about invitations, Megan, who needs to be invited and who generally is invited, you know, to an AGM?
So for an organisation that's member-based, and remembering that not all of our incorporated bodies are member-based, but if you have members, it's their meeting, so that they are invited, they have an entitlement to come along and to vote. If it's not a members' meeting, you may choose to have it open to the local community, to the public, to come along and hear about what you've been doing. And similarly, if you do have members, you might choose to do that as well. You might be wanting to showcase what it is that you've been doing in the community over the last 12 months. So, you know, really, you can invite whoever you want over and above that requirement to have your members there. It's up to you as an organisation.
Fantastic. We're talking AGMs and my very special guest via Zoom somewhere in Victoria on her way home after 3 months on the road is Megan Buntine. And we've just been talking about the important things that need to happen before the AGM. And after this next song, which is another one of Megan's selections, Dolly Parton, 9 to 5, we're going to come back and talk about what happens at the AGM. Have a listen.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. Them shatter. You're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. In the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for for the day your ship will come in and the tide's gonna turn and it's all gonna roll.
And thanks for joining us this morning. My very special guest via Zoom is Megan Buntine. Megan is usually resident in Buxton. She hasn't been there for over 3 months, been on the road, heading home, hoping to get back tomorrow. And Megan and I have been talking this morning and for the next half hour just talking about AGMs. And we've talked up till now about what has to happen beforehand and why we have them and who's invited and all of those lead up to the AGM things. Now let's talk about what happens at the AGM. Megan, what's the critical reason? What's the critical thing that happens at an AGM typically?
Yeah, so look, and I know some of this stuff can sound quite daunting sometimes, but it's not that tricky. It's just a process. And if anyone's got any questions, they're more than welcome to get in touch with me offline. But, you know, basically use that secretary satchel as guide of what you need to do. It talks you through all those things, like what do we need to do at an AGM. It talks about what is an AGM. I'm just scrolling through it in front of me now. So if you think about, well, what are the key things that we need to cover at our annual general meeting? First of all, go to your rules of your association as an incorporated body, and that will tell you. So I'm using the model rules as a bit of a template here because I find that the vast majority of organisations, small community organisations, are either using the model rules or a derivative of that. So I'll just go through what it actually says.
Great.
In the model rules about
this is,
the AGM.
This is the agenda. This is kind of the agenda, Megan.
Yeah, it says the ordinary business of an AGM is as follows. So firstly, it's to confirm the minutes of the previous AGM. So that's nothing, terribly difficult. To receive and consider the annual report from the committee. So we all are used to sort of either having a written form or a verbal presentation from generally the president or the chairperson. You might have a document that includes the reports that people will present and also the financial reports. So the financial reports need to be presented as well. So that's the key, I guess, critical piece of business information. So the other reports might be more about celebrating our achievements and what have we done throughout the year and the value that we've added to our community in our organisation. The next point, so point number three, is to elect the members of the committee for the coming year, or for some organisations that might be that you're only electing, say, a third of your committee each year, so you're only electing, a certain portion, but they have a three-year term, for example. And then the fourth point in the model rules talks about part of the business of an annual general meeting is to confirm or vary the amounts of the annual subscription or joining fees, if there are any. So it's as simple as that. That's the four things you need to cover off. You might choose to add other things as well. So you would add that to the agenda before the meeting with the notice of the meeting. So it's really, it's quite straightforward. And look, my view really is to get the business end of it over and done with as quickly as possible and get on to the fun stuff.
That sounds good.
Which is usually having a great speaker and then having some nice afternoon tea or something like that.
Yes, thanks, Megan. Let's drill down a little bit on the election part, Megan, because in my experience, and I have been to many AGMs over the years, I've seen them done very well and I've seen them done very badly. What's important when it comes to that election part? Who conducts that and is it by secret ballot or what? Just your thoughts around election process.
Yeah, again, so I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it's about going back to your rules and seeing what your rules says about how your organisation manages that. You know, oftentimes it's an open vote where people put their hands up or whatever, but it might be that you think that's a bit contentious, so you have a written secret ballot. It might be that you get to the point, and it's interesting, I was asked to chair an AGM a year or two ago, and I thought to ask for a copy of their rules in advance so I could swat up on what their processes were, because it got to the point where we had a tie for one of the positions. I think it was the president position. So we actually had to go through the next steps of, okay, well, what do we do next? If we've got a tie, then we go through certain processes. So make sure that you're worded up on how to deal with that. In terms of who manages the process, I think it's good practice, if you can, to get someone external to your organisation to actually run the election. So then, you know, it's about conflicts of interest and those sorts of things, so making sure everything's as squeaky clean as possible. If you can't get someone external, at least get someone who's not standing for the committee to run the election, to act as the returning officer. So, you know, you could say that's a bit of a grey area too as to whether that person might have preferences for one party or another party in different roles. So I think it's good practices to get somebody external to run the election. And, you know, getting back to what we were talking about before about who to invite, you might be inviting external people such as representatives of your funding body or a government agency that you have a connection with. So I think back to our tourism association, for example, up near Marysville, we would always have the council people there who were involved in tourism and economic development. So we would often call on one of them to act as our election chair.
Fantastic. And do you, I've seen it done, you know, in a number of ways, but do people typically who are standing for a position, would you encourage that they have an opportunity to say why they're standing? You know, do they have a 1 minute or a 2 minute opportunity to say why they're standing or not, Megan? I mean, your thoughts around that? I've seen it totally done both ways.
Yeah, it's totally up to the organisation. And I think, you know, if you've got more than one person standing for a position, it's worth doing that, because then the people who are the members who are voting can make a more informed decision perhaps around some of that stuff. It's totally up to the organisation. 9 times out of 10, I find you're lucky to get one person to stand for each position. So if you get to the point where you've got more than one and you need to do that, that's probably a good thing.
Yes, fantastic.
In terms of, you know, what to do at the meeting, I mentioned briefly before about getting through the business and having a good inspirational speaker. I think that is, you know, a quick meeting is a good meeting in my opinion, and if you can get through your formal business of your AGM quickly and get onto the things that people really, that's what you're using as your draw card, is your exciting speaker that people want to come along to hear.
And sometimes, Megan, that could be someone who's been impacted, supported by the organisation over the years, who's got a story to tell, whose life has been changed as a result of the work of the organisation over the last year, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything like that. You know, it might be someone who, if your organisation's taking a new direction in the coming year, somebody who's been involved in whatever it is that you do, who can inspire you to and give you some ideas about how they've done things. I think, you know, the world's your oyster in terms of getting a great speaker. In terms of the presentation and keeping the meeting short too, I know some organisations will stand up and read through every report that's written out in the annual report. Personally, I'd prefer, if you get away with it, not to do that. Obviously, you need to have the treasurer to give you some to present to a certain degree around their report. I think that's important, but I don't think you need to have the president and the CEO's report and every other report in the financial or in the annual report read out.
I totally agree with you on that one, Megan.
Take them as read.
100%. Now, we've had a listener just contact us in terms of with a question. Where do you get a secretary's satchel that you refer to from?
Yeah. So you can Google it, and it's downloadable as a PDF document, or you can email me and I will send you a copy. Or I tend to have it electronically and as a hard copy because I'm a bit old school in that way. So it's useful to have it. I sort of carry it around with me and then I can flip through it when I'm talking to people about different areas. But, yeah, it's readily accessible on the internet. If you can't find it, get in touch with me and I will email you my copy.
Terrific. And Megan's email address is megan@mjbconsulting.net.au. So, or you can get it care of this station. There you go. That's
good question. Good
that's
question.
Put out by Justice Connect, of course. Megan, great resource as you've identified. Okay, what have we missed, Megan? That has to happen on the night. Do we have to have supper? Of course, we've got to have supper or something, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Food always brings people together and makes them happy. So I think it's a good opportunity as well after you've had your inspirational speaker and everyone's really excited to be able to get together and just network and have a chat, catch up with people. You know, often for organisations that perhaps don't have other members' meetings, it's the one opportunity for members to catch up. So I think that's really important. You know, it's interesting. And people who know me well will be surprised, I think, about my view about some of this that I'm going to share with you now. But I think having food at the AGM is important, but I think in the past, you know, we might have had wine and beer and things like that, but I tend to go away from that now. I tend to think our funding bodies probably would want us to be spending their money on things other than alcohol, so I tend to just go with a cup of tea. And I think also, you know, increasingly it's an opportunity for our community organisations to demonstrate leadership in promoting drug-free events by not having alcohol at these sorts of organisations. And, you know, one particular board I sat on a few years ago, it was a health service board, and I thought it's even more important for us to not be serving alcohol when we're trying to promote healthy lifestyles. So, yeah, that's just something to think about, I think.
Yes. Now, before we go to our next song, one other thing that we haven't talked about that is important at AGMs is the thing called a quorum. Megan, what's a quorum and how does that work?
So a quorum is the number of people or the percentage of people who are eligible to vote, making sure that you've got that amount of people there. So it's effectively meaning that a significant enough amount of a good portion of our organisation are making the decisions. So, again, go back to your rules. I'm saying like a broken record again, but go back to your rules. That will tell you what the quorum is. Generally, it's 10% of members eligible to vote. I think oftentimes you'll see special resolutions are being tabled for AGMs because that's possibly the main meeting where you get the most members in attendance, so you're most likely to get the quorum there to be able to vote on those sorts of things.
And can I be devil's advocate and say what happens when you don't have a quorum then, Megan?
Yeah, well, again, this is something that's covered in your rules and you need to check that before you go into the AGM. But generally, if you don't have a quorum there within 30 minutes, you need to adjourn your meeting. You can still have your afternoon tea and your speaker, but the actual business part of your meeting, you'll need to adjourn it to another time and try again to get that quorum there.
Particularly if you have a special resolution or something around that's going to have a huge impact, yes? But you
indeed,
have, but you have to legally do it anyway.
Yeah. Something else to think about too that I was thinking about when we were sort of thinking about what would we talk about in terms of during the meeting is I attended an AGM a few years ago where we knew it was going to be an interesting one because, you know, normally we'd get about 12 people there. I think we had 70 in the room.
Wow. And,
you know, there was some challenges that were bubbling away in the background for this particular organisation and they, you know, they had their government reps there. They had all sorts of people there to support them. But nonetheless, one of the key protagonists stood up in the middle of the AGM, turned his back on those who were running the meeting and started talking at the 70-odd people who were gathered there about his particular agenda. And, you know, we had some pretty senior government people who were chairing that meeting and they were sitting there looking fairly gobsmacked as well. So I think one of the keys is if you think you're going to be facing a challenging meeting, prepare particularly well for one of those. You know, go to your rules, check what it says, think about, well, how do I diffuse this sort of a situation? Do I call for an adjournment? Do we go and have a cup of tea early and then come back when people have contained themselves? So just being a bit prepared for things like that if you think that there's a possibility something could go a bit haywire.
Great. Great words of advice there. Thank you, Megan. And we're going to go with another one of your songs, which is, it's disappeared. We are going to go down further to USA for Africa. We are the world. How about that? There you go.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Down and out.
And this morning, Megan and I have been talking about AGMs. And if you've missed the program this morning so far, it will be podcast here. Thanks very much, Greg, and available in a few days' time. So there you go. We've talked about what has to happen before an AGM, during an AGM, and now to wrap up, we're going to talk about what has to happen afterwards. Megan, that doesn't seem so difficult. The AGM's over. What's left to do?
Yeah, so you've got to make sure you do these final parts. That's a key element of having a good AGM. So you need to report back to your regulatory body. So oftentimes that's Consumer Affairs Victoria. It might be the ACNC, the Australian Charities Not-for-Profit Commission, if you're a registered charity though. So just making sure you let them know that you've had your AGM, you give them a copy of your annual report, your minutes, those sorts of things, you lodge that so they can update their details. I think that, you know, in terms, we talked briefly about elections before the break, and one thing I didn't touch on was that some organisations' rules will say that they elect the individual positions at the AGM. Other organisations will just elect the committee or the board, and then that governing body at their first meeting will decide who takes which position. So if that's the case in your organisation, then you obviously need to promote that to your members if you have members, or pop it on your website so people know who has which roles within your organisation so they can contact accordingly.
Terrific. And I'm going to steal your thunder just for once and say that after the AGM, it seems like it's a time to reflect on your strategic plan, your reason for being for your organisation, and you know your steps from there. Is that the right thing, Megan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think oftentimes I see organisations coming to me just after their AGM saying, right, we've got a new committee or a new board. Well, A, we want some governance training, but B, we want to review our strategic plan and our directions and our vision and those sorts of things. So can you come in and help us do that sort of thing? So it's a good time when you've got the new group that have come together. It can be a really good way of gelling that new group too, you know, creating those that sort of that synergy and team building, I think is the term I'm trying to come up with. So getting people working together is, okay, really honing in on what are our priorities over the coming 12 months or however many years we've been elected.
Terrific. We're almost out of time this morning, but just wanted to give a couple of plugs right now. If you've missed me giving it earlier, Megan's website, there is a link there to the Secretary's Satchel that's put out by Justice Connect. You can just go on to Megan's website, mjbconsulting.net.au, and there's a link there that'll pop up. Lots and lots of resources there. That's absolutely fantastic. Today we also have Bastian Fox Phelan zooming in all the way from Newcastle, New South Wales, who's one of the organisers of the Museum of Contemporary Art Zine Fair in Sydney. And they've worked with the museum to produce a zine about zine fairs. And if you want to hear all about that, make sure you're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1 at 12 noon today. It's called Zine Plus. And Cora is going to be hosting that. So fantastic. Megan, we have 1.5 minutes left. I'm going to give you 1 minute of it just to see if you can capture again the critical reason why, when, where AGMs, before, during and after. There you go. Your time starts now.
Okay. So why is about accountability and transparency. I think that's pretty straightforward. I think thinking about our AGMs in terms of those three areas that we've talked about, so before, during and after, can help you to tick off and make sure that you've done the key things you need to. And I think the other take home that I'll give to people is there's two key documents that you must use to support you. First of all, the rules of your association or the constitution or whatever you choose to call it, that contains information about how you must run your AGM. And secondly, for incorporated associations in Victoria, the Secretary's Satchel is a fantastic resource. There's nearly 30 pages in that about how to run an AGM, different things you need to do. So you can't go past it as a go-to.
Fantastic. And Megan, that was exactly 1 minute. I'm amazed. Hey, safe travels to you. Hope you get home safely tomorrow. And thank you for zooming in again. We've had the pleasure of your company, well, across the country over the last 3 months. You've kept keeping in touch with us, and we've really appreciated that. Listeners, please thank Megan. We're clapping. Yes, well done. And look forward to your company again, same time next week on Community Conversations.